Welcome to Tonia's Kitchen, where taste and nutrition go hand in hand. Here is Tonia King.
Today, I'm thrilled to have joining me Anna Francese Gass with the brand new book, Italian Snacking. Anna, thanks for joining me.
Thank you so much for having me.
This is a book true to my heart. I've fallen in love with a lot of these recipes and pictures. Tell me a little bit about yourself and if this is your first book.
I'm also 100% Italian. I was born in Calabria in a very, very small town named Acri. And I came here when I was 1 year old because I have an Italian mother, but I have an Italian American father. So he was there studying abroad, met my mom, they got married. I was born, and then they came back here to the States. Well, he came back and she and I came for our first time. And I grew up in a small town in Rhode Island, Westerly. It's a, you know, right on the water, on the shore. Very nice upbringing, surrounded by lots and lots of Italians. So, you know, aside from kind of having a home where little Italy of a home, I was also surrounded by my mom's friends who were all immigrants, hung out with their first gen kids, and really just, you know, kind of lived outwardly as American, but in our home as Italian in both language, culture, tradition, and of course, food. I always say, you know, being Italian is my first love. And I grew up and I went to college, never really thought about a career in food because at the time, you know, food media was really starting to kind of blow up, but it wasn't something that people thought about. You know, Rachel Ray had just come out with her show. Food Network was kind of exploding. So I was very interested, but I never thought it was something that I could do. So I went to college. I majored in psychology and journalism. And then after school, ended up taking a corporate job because I wanted to live in Manhattan and pay was right. So I did that. And it was fine. And I enjoyed it. I was very good at it. You know, everyone enjoys making money.
Of course.
So I lived in the city, got married, and then eventually moved to Connecticut after I had my daughter. You know, after I had my second daughter, I just realized I wasn't really fulfilled professionally. And there was something missing, something I didn't feel fulfilled. And so I decided I wanted to do a career change. I ended up enrolling in the French Culinary Institute in downtown New York City. Amazing school. I got to cook with Jacques Pepin. Anthony Bourdain stopped by. Eric Rappaire. It was a phenomenal, phenomenal experience. And it also had a really great career services. And they jump-started my career in food media. I worked right away for Martha Stewart. I ended up being able to work closely with Amanda Hesser. I worked for Food 52. I still work for Food 52. And just really learned the anatomy of a recipe, how things are put together. And I realized that's what I was really drawn to. I did some restaurant work. I loved it. It's, I think as far as training and skill, it's important. But I had two little girls at home. Like being a restaurant chef, working on a line wasn't going to be something that I could do. So, you know, I just kind of kept on that train. And then Food 52 decided they were going to start doing cookbooks. So I was heavily involved in the developing and the testing. And I loved it. But, you know, three books in, I, you know, was with a friend and I was pregnant with my third. And she said, you know, Anna, you test all these cookbooks. You should have a cookbook. And, you know, sometimes it just takes someone saying something like that.
Yes.
So, you know, I kind of stored it. And then I decided while I was pregnant with my son, I wanted to do a little project with my mother. She's an Italian. She has all these phenomenal recipes. She cooks for us all the time. And nothing's written down. So I said, you know, we really need to get these recipes written down. I know how to structure a recipe. You're going to cook and I'm going to write. And we had a little Sunday project that we did. And after we finished it and I felt, you know, very happy that, you know, these recipes were preserved. I thought, you know, I have all these friends that have immigrant mothers. This could be a really fun, just blog, like a fun project.
Yeah.
So I started traveling around the country, jumping from kitchen to kitchen. My criteria were you had to be an immigrant and you had to be a mother. I really wanted to focus on women. And of course, being a good cook didn't hurt. So I ended up interviewing and cooking with 35 women, over 100 recipes, and Heirloom Kitchen was born. It came out in 2019. I was featured in the New York Times, bestseller on Amazon. I mean, it really did everything I wanted it to do. And it was really just a love letter to my mother and immigrant women that came to this country and, you know, cooked their dishes and of course, assimilated, learned the language, raised American children. But like I said, kept that homeland, food, culture, tradition, sacred, you know, in the four walls of where they lived, whatever, you know, state in the United States they were in. Once that kind of happened, you know, I kind of had to think about myself as a brand, because after you have a cookbook come out, you get a lot of press, you go on TV.
Right.
Okay, what do I really, who am I? How do I really want to express myself? And I noticed, you know, because social media is such a good barometer for what people are looking for, or especially, you know, when people look at you as a person, what they expect. And I just started noticing that whenever I posted something Italian, it just got a lot of traction, a lot of views, a lot of comments. And I mean, I think, of course, it's because, you know, Italian food is the most beloved cuisine in the world. And
oh,
that's just me
absolutely.
Saying it. Yeah, I mean, that's actually been polled and surveyed. But I think it was also because I was being at my most authentic. You know, when I speak about Italian food, I can speak from experience. I can speak from a place of knowledge. I've traveled through Italy and to Italy frequently, whether it was visiting relatives or sightseeing, whatever it was. So it just felt very natural and comfortable to me. I said, I need to lean into this. I need to make this kind of my mission and my journey. And I started seeing other trends on, you know, Instagram and TikTok, that, you know, this whole boom of snacking, you know, like girl dinner and, you know, these small bites. And I said to myself, my gosh, like Italians have been doing this forever. So I said, you know, well, credit needs to be given where credit is due.
Yeah.
So I thought a book on all the snacks of Italy, all 20 regions, could be really fascinating. And, you know, when I gave my proposal to my agent, she's like, you know, Anna, I thought I knew everything about Italy. And I've read thousands of cookbooks on Italian cuisine. And like, this is something new. And to me, that was a win, because it's been 5 years since my other book came out. And everyone, you know, whenever you write a cookbook, the first thing they say is, oh, well, what's your next book going to be? And it's like, first of all, can I take a breath?
Yes.
But secondly, like, I'm the type of person that I never in my life have done something just to do it. I really try to live my life with intention. And if I'm going to put a book out into the world, there has to be a reason. It's going to have to matter. And if it's just going to be another collection of pasta dishes and chicken parmesan and meatballs and everything you've seen 5,000 times over, well, then really, what's the point? And also, how am I going to ask you, you know, for your dollars, you know, your time, your money, and your,
right,
you know, your investment in my cookbook, if I'm not giving you something new? So when she said that, I knew I really had something. And what she was referencing, I think, the most was the regional information that I provide in the book. I wanted this to be almost like a travel advisory for you. You know, like, you're going to go to Italy and you're going to go to Liguria. All right. So what does that mean? So you can look up Liguria in my book, and it's going to tell you about the climate, the customs, the topography, why you eat in certain foods in that area. And I think that's fascinating about Italy, that in Sicily, you're having rice balls, and then in Naples, you're having pizza. And then in Rome, you know, you're having the four pastas, and then you go up north and you're having fondue. It's fascinating to me that there is this true influence, you know, like in Sicily, you have a lot of African and Arab influence in their food. And when you're up north, well, that's Germany, Switzerland, and Austria. So I love the fact that based on all of these different influences coming in, that it left such a permanent like influence on each and every dish that the people eat. So you can kind of travel the world as you're going through Italy.
Oh, absolutely.
And it's reflected in their snacks. So I thought, this is going to be really fun. Everybody loves a good snack, and you're going to learn something in the process.
So close to my heart. I just align with you so much with what you were saying about growing up, how we always made everything. You know, I always remember my family, we never ate things out of a box or out of a can. You always made everything. So this book, it just brings it all back to me. And I love the fact that you do explore all of Italy.
I really love being Calabrese. I really enjoy the food. I also love when I go up north and I tell people I'm Calabrese, meaning the north of Italy.
Sure.
They'll always say, oh, you guys have the best food. And it's so funny, you know, that even within Italy, where the food is so delicious everywhere, that the South is really known for the best food. And, you know, I think one, it's the climate. It's, you know, you have that really beautiful warm summer. So, you know, the tomatoes and the peppers
and the figs.
Figs, the olive groves. There's just so much richness in that soil that really gives you all this delicious food. And then, of course, the wheat production. You know, we eat a lot of pasta in the South. We eat a lot of pizza.
Right.
Everybody loves, the peas. The pizza, the pane. Really good bread, pizza, pane, pasta. I always say the three P's.
Let's talk about some of these great recipes in this book. We're talking with Anna Francese Goss about Italian snacking. You cover a wide area of Italy. Let's pick a few recipes from a couple different regions.
Yeah. All right. So one thing that I'm really proud of and gets a lot of love because it's right on the cover is my recipe for cannoli. I was lucky enough to go to Palermo as part of my research. I kind of traveled back and forth to Italy three or four times over the last couple of years to hit as many regions as I could,
Yeah.
both to get photography for the book. You'll see a lot of shots in the book that are not just food, they're of my travels through Italy. But also to do research. I had never been all the way up north and I'd never been to Sicily. So I said, if I'm going to write about these things, I need to get, boots on the ground.
Right.
So I went to Palermo. I mean, the street food culture there is phenomenal. So I have a whole section on street food because that's kind of a snack category, which is 24 hours. And I went to a church that was also an old monastery that they still have a pastry shop. And the phenomenal thing about cannolis is what is told is that they were brought to Italy by the Arabs, and the Arabs taught the nuns how to make them. And then they would make them for high holidays and for Carnevale because it's a celebration food. But
Right.
then, of course, because of their popularity, they are now made all the time, and they've kind of become like the dessert of Sicily. And I can tell you, these were the best cannolis I ever had. I went home and I said, okay, I want to be able to tell someone how to make this at home. And I think I can make it not that hard. Now, yes, you do have to buy the molds to make the cannoli shells. They're like $12 on Amazon. You'll have them forever. They're stainless steel. But the cannoli dough, I was able to figure out how to make it all in my food processor. So literally, you dump in the ingredients, you pulse it, and you have a dough. Cut them out as you would biscuits, just a circle,
Yeah.
roll it around that mold and fry them up. If you can fry chicken, you can make cannoli shells. And then the cream on the inside is also incredibly simple. You're mixing ricotta, mascarpone, a little lemon zest, a little sugar, a little vanilla extract, again, in your food processor, and whip it to perfection. It is the most delicious filling. And then you fry your cannoli shells and you fill them to order. And
How
they're amazing.
simple.
I really, and I have a video going up showing how to make them. And I really think it's something that can be done at home. It's a fun little project. And there is nothing like a homemade cannoli.
Oh
Like,
my
I'm.
goodness, I agree.
So that's really great. And then if something from the north that I really like, I went to Lake Como and they have a bread pudding that they called miasca. And it had apples and pears in it. And really, you just kind of use any fruit that's kind of on its last legs and getting a little bit soft and
Yeah.
any old bread. I mean, this is a peasant recipe. And then the egg custard, and then you bake it up. And I did it in a pound loaf cake tin. So you can kind of slice it and serve it.
Yeah.
And it's so good. And when you think of bread pudding, you would not think of Italy, but they make tons of bread pudding because there is so much bread and they don't believe in waste. And that's all bread pudding is putting some old bread to use.
Sounds like a delicious snack for sure. There's so many things here: Campanata, arancini. Do you have any other favorites that you want to share?
Yeah, I mean, so the book is separated by time of day. I thought that would be really fun and something different for the reader as opposed to having, first, second, thirds, dessert.
Right.
Because with this book, it's all snacks. So in the morning, after breakfast, around 10 a.m., if you're in Italy, you'll notice that the pastry shops, the bars, are kind of bustling at that hour. And that's because Italians have a mid-morning snack called spuntino di metà mattina, which means mid-morning snack in Italian. It's just a fun time of day that people take a little bit of a breather from work. They get themselves a cappuccino. They get themselves, a cornetto or a cookie, and they sit down, and it's not usually more than 5-10 minutes, and then they're back off to work. And so that section of the book, the beginning, you're going to find a lot of cookies because Italians love cookies in the morning. You're going to find a lot of snacking cakes, and you're actually going to find like this one recipe that I love, and it's called pizzette delizia, which means delicious little pizza. And I found them in Sardinia. And again, it's a 10 a.m. snack, and it's a puff pastry pizza. It's delicious.
And what are you putting on it?
So you're just rolling out some puff pastry, sauce and cheese, a little dried oregano. You put another piece of puff pastry on top, and then you cut them into squares and bake them. So it's kind of like a Hot Pocket.
Yeah, very
but
easy
homemade.
And quick. Yeah. All right.
Then in the afternoon, around 3-4 o'clock, there is a very important time of day, and it's called merenda. And it's the afternoon school snack. Kids get home from school around that time, and Italian children are very accustomed when they get home from school, because Italians traditionally eat pretty late. 8-9 o'clock at night is when dinner is served. The kids are not going to make it to that without a snack, so they have merenda. So it could be a little mortadella sandwich, it could be a little plate of gelato, or it could be a snacking cake. Traditionally, it would be your nonna that, baked a cake for the night before for after dinner, and she saved a couple slices for next day for snack. So we have a lot of snacking cakes in that section.
So why don't you get into detail with one of them for me?
Yeah, one that's really great is the, it's called the Invisible Apple Cake. If you go into the north of Italy, there are thousands of apple groves, and people don't really think about Italy and apples.
Right.
It seems American is apple pie, but there's a lot of apple groves in northern Italy. And what's great is the fact that you'll see a lot of strudels in the north. So there's a beautiful apple strudel in my book, but there's also this apple cake, and they call it invisible apple cake because you slice the apples so thin and you fold it into this vanilla batter. And so that when you bake the cake, you get that vanilla scent, but then the apples were cut so thin that they kind of melt into the dough and make it very like moist, but you still kind of get a little bit of the apple flavor with each bite. So I love that cake, and it's so perfect in the afternoon. It's not super sweet. And that in a glass of milk for a little kid is just phenomenal.
That's perfect. That's perfect. What can you tell listeners that may not know about the difference between the North and the South? So the South uses more olive oil as compared to butter in the North.
Absolutely. So there is a butter line in Italy. In the South, there really is no cattle. It's very mountainous terrain. So you're going to get sheep, you're going to get goat, which is why you're going to see a lot of, the cheeses are sheep and goat based milks. And then when you get up north, after you pass that butter line where there is more cattle, basically like, Florence and up, that's why you'll get like bistecca alla Fiorentina. You'll have steaks in Florence, thick beef steaks. And then up even more north, because they have the kind of the French, the Swiss, and the Germanic influence, they are going to be using more butter. And they're farther from the olive groves that you'll see all over Puglia. And, even Sicily has great olive oil, Calabria. I mean, basically the south is kind of where the olives really, and right outside in Tuscany too, lots of olive groves. You're just finding that the base of your ingredients are different. And of course, that means that the eating is just different. And the funny thing is, when you're up north and you're having a strudel, or you're having like, they have this German Austrian dish called Kaschmarienten, which is basically a Dutch baby. You're not eating anything like that in the south. It's just not prepared,
Right.
And I just think that's very fun because you can kind of travel Italy in this book through your stomach.
How about a recipe from Calabria?
So one of the recipes from Calabria that I included was peperonata. It's something my grandmother made, and it's basically a pepper stew that you put on a crostini, and you can eat it. You can also put it on top of pasta if you really have a lot left over. It tastes delicious. And all it really is thinly sliced peppers and onions with tomatoes that's stewed for a long time, garlic, oregano, a little chili flake because we like it spicy in Calabria. And, you can have a little crostini party where you make the caponata, which is the eggplant, stewed eggplant dish that's also served on bread. You can have the peperonata. You can do some of the olive pate that's in the book. That is, a kind of a Tuscan or Puglian recipe, and a nice little aperitivo, and you're good to go. That's from the aperitivi section, which comes after merenda. We all know that. That's cocktail hour.
Absolutely, and that's great. It's kind of like a crostini buffet.
Yeah.
It sounds wonderful.
If you follow me at Anna F. Goss, I've been one by one making all the recipes from the book. You can use my Instagram almost as a reference point when you're making something.
We are talking with Anna Francese Goss about her brand new book, Italian Snacking. And I was just going to ask you, how do we find you on social media?
Yeah, I think, you know, for me, I kind of leaned into Instagram a while back, and I really enjoy that platform. But of course, everyone uses different things. But if you are kind of active on Instagram, you can find me and my videos there. And then what is also really nice is, you know, because of the messaging function, I have more people send me direct messages than email. I'm always available on email, but if you have a quick recipe question, you can DM me. I do answer my DMs. People are always very surprised, but I do answer my DMs.
That's great, Anna. That is great. This is a beautiful book, Italian Snacking, and it's available everywhere.
Absolutely. Your local bookstore, if they don't have it, you can request it. They can get it in a few days. Obviously, Amazon, Barnes & Noble. If you are in a Barnes & Noble with a cafe, they are featuring two of the recipes from my book in the cafe.
Oh, great.
Yeah. So you can get the zucchini, the savory zucchini bread, which is a phenomenal recipe. It's zucchini bread, but with parmigiano and pine nuts, and it's amazing. Or you can get the sbrizzolona, which is the hazelnut chocolate crumb cake. And
oh,
they're
my
even
goodness.
Selling it. You can buy the whole cake if you want.
Really appreciate you taking some time to chat with me today, Anna.
Absolutely. This was a lot of fun.
Thanks for tuning in. We hope you'll subscribe to this podcast as we continue to take you around the world of food and wine on Tonia's Kitchen.